Hello and welcome to the M17 podcast. Tonight I'm joined by Eddie.
Good evening.
And we're joined by Aaron. Hello, Aaron.
Good evening.
How you doing, Aaron? Buzzing with Spurs top of the league, I'm assuming.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we've said a lot about could we, but I think it's feet on the ground, but we'll get more into that in a bit.
I mean, we couldn't. But could we? Yeah, but...
I don't know. We might.
We could.
We couldn't.
probably can't. But I don't know. Stranger things have happened, haven't they? Stranger things have happened.
Yeah, that's so true. Especially in the Premier League.
Exactly. So, who knows? Maybe we could. Let's start with the game that put us top of the league. Actually, Aaron, we always have you on as the optimist, but I do feel like in the group chat of late, I've been banging the optimist drum a little bit. Because I think Jed rallies against me the most. He was insisting that was going to be a routine Fulham win, I think.
Yeah, it was 2-0 Fulham.
That's really funny to be fair. The way he put it was like as if it was like Fulham always win the fixture.
Yeah, it was like a fact that it was going to happen. It was as if Jed had come back from the future just to tell us that. He was so confident that was going to be a loss. Because I was getting giddy about the fact that if we won our next two games, we'd be 5 points clear after 10 games. I mean, how can you not be giddy with that? And we got the win. It wasn't perfect, especially from, you know, what I gather watching it from home, which I feel like was a slightly different experience to in the stadium. So I actually went to the game. But yeah, especially the first half, we played really well, didn't we, Eddie?
Yeah, I think, again, it was much like the Arsenal game somewhat, much especially like the Luton game where we started the game brilliantly. I think we were doing all the things that we expect this Tottenham team to do, or at least what Ange expects this Tottenham team to do. And I think that the problem was, and the problem that has been with this season, is that we weren't finishing our chances. And you do begin to worry when like chances go begging, especially when in previous seasons chances came at a bit of a premium. I guess the only difference is that this season we know that we're going to create chances. We've scored in every single game, competitive game that we've played in this season already. So that's including the cup games. That's 10 games where we've scored a goal. So we know chances are going to come. It is about being clinical. And I think we do have in Son one of the most clinical attackers in the world. So I do think that whilst we are missing chances, I do believe that we are going to get a goal at some point in the game. It's a different feeling than us spurning chances and thinking we're not going to see another chance for another 20 minutes that I felt under different managers. But talking about the things that we did well, we're talking about the same players week in, week out that are instrumental. If we start from the back, not including Vicario, who I'm sure we'll get onto separately. Adogi, fantastic. Showing once again that like he was born to play this inverted fullback role. It's quite incredible, actually. You wouldn't associate a fullback's attributes with being able to get a ball fired into them in the centre midfield position and then being able to turn and drive at a defence. That's what a midfielder does. And the fact that he's able to do that as well as overlap, underlap, be aggressive in his pressing and attack and tackling. Well, you know, like 20 years old and he's able to do that in the Premier League just goes to show what kind of talent he is.
Yeah. I just want to jump in on Adogi quickly because I genuinely feel like he's a world-class player, and seeing him in the flesh, it really hit home to me. And he seems to me like one of those players, almost like the early Gareth Bale, when we saw him playing at left back, where there was that feeling that, like, well, Redknapp was like, this guy's so good, we have to move him up the pitch. And I know modern football is different now, and I mean, he's so good at that position, why would you change him? But I actually feel like Adogie could play in basically any position apart from striker. I just genuinely think he's that good. Like you say, Eddie, his control is just incredible. His passing range is decent. I feel like he needs a bit more confidence in front of goal. Like, he did spurn a pretty good opportunity where he tried to pass it. But yeah, what a talent.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think whether you're watching it at home or watching it in the stadium, there is no denying that he has that dynamism to, like, if his concentration is right and if his, like, awareness is right, he can shackle any winger. And he's already faced some of the best wingers in the world in his opening eight, nine games. So I found myself really impressive with him again. And key players, Madison, Son, brilliant again. I think what we're seeing is that Son and Madison are players that potentially aren't what they were before. They're not purple patch players. In the right setup, they have this quality consistently. The thing is, you need to get Son close to goal, which we're doing now, and you need to get Madison in those half spaces, which we're also doing now. The difference is, yesterday we didn't really, the two goals didn't come from Madison being creative. The two goals came from him doing what Ange wants our team to do, which is press, be on the front foot. Spurs of yesteryear, Spurs of a year ago, 3 years ago, we're not pressing as high as we are yet, as we were on Monday. We don't get those goals because our centre midfielder isn't pressing their centre back. That just isn't happening. Our centre midfielder is on our halfway line, even when they have the ball, let alone when
that's a low block.
Exactly. Our centre backs are not. Do you know who presses their centre midfielder for that first goal? It's Mickey van de Ven. Van de Ven is inside their half pressing one of their players because he's aggressive enough. He can read he's read the game. Now he's thinking, I can nick it here. Great press into Richarlison. Great first touch from Richarlison actually into Son, and you've got yourself a goal there. But that is the difference this team is showing from last season. So I think, yeah, if we're just strictly talking about the first half, I thought we were doing every single thing right that we've been doing this season. And then also doing some doing the dirty stuff really well. Vinicius didn't get a sniff, had to get subbed at halftime. And Willian, potentially the only player on that team showing any kind of quality on the ball. And I want to do a special shout out actually to Højbjerg, who's come in for Bissouma. Arguably the most difficult position to swap in and out for, because the qualities that Bissouma have aren't transferable to just any other midfielder. So we had to play a different way. And I think that what Højbjerg possesses that Bissouma maybe doesn't is that long-range passing. And we were able to switch the ball way more often than we usually do, because we're not relying on Bissouma to move the ball by carrying it. And actually, the reason why we weren't creating too many chances is because we weren't moving the ball quick enough. And once we started to do that by switching the ball out, we were then able to create more chances. So, yeah, I think big shout out to Højbjerg for coming in there and doing a great job.
Yeah, and I do agree that, like, yeah, we set up pretty much perfectly. One thing that was scary, I found, was that, like, because we kind of press so high and we have such a high line now, when Fulham did get the ball, it was like, oh shit, like, we're completely open. But, like, in a player like Van de Ven, I think Jed put it on Twitter, he's just a cheat code. Like, he can just sprint back and clean up. And, like, Vinicius, like, okay, he wasn't a great player for Spurs, but I never thought of him as that slow. But I've never seen a player look as slow as he did compared to Van de Ven. It was actually, like, quite remarkable. to see. Who impressed you, Aaron?
I think I'm gonna take the opportunity to talk about Vicario, because you talk about a player that's just come in from a team that finished in the bottom half of Serie A. And I'll be honest, I hadn't really heard anything about him before we signed him. I don't think that many people had, and if they had, well done to them. But we knew that we had to get that replacement in for Lloris. We said during pre-season that he was looking a bit shaky and we didn't like what we were really seeing. And people still had these sort of comments after the Brentford game. But ever since then, he's saving us points. Like he is making huge saves game after game. And it might only be that he makes one or two saves a game. He's not making lots and lots and lots, but goalkeepers will know this. Like, to stay awake when you have got only one or two things to do in that sort of sense in a game is a really, really difficult thing to do. And to stay so alert and to pull out these big saves is remarkable. And I really do think that a lot of people are really underrating him. I saw a list the other day, admittedly by some ridiculous United fan on Twitter, but who just had like him as that Spurs keeper in fifth out of the goalkeepers in the quote unquote big six. And I thought, this geezer's lost his mind for a start. But Vicario is saving us points. He is part of the reason that we are doing so well. And I just think when we look at the shot stopping that he's made, those are some of the ones that Lloris is letting slip. And yeah. I think something else that obviously this comes from Ange, it comes from the players, but he's part of the group. I don't know if anyone's seen, there's the clip of Saar tracked back and he like nodded a little cross away and he like busted a gut to get there. And he's there just like pumping everyone up, like celebrating it as if it were a goal. And I just think the team unity is off the charts as well. But Vicario is doing unbelievable things. And I think at the end of the season, we will be able to point to moments where he's earned us a point or he's earned us even 3 points. He's been absolutely fantastic. And I think he deserves many props.
Aaron, the way you're talking about the whole team there, it does kind of make me think, I mean, when you kind of allow yourself to kind of lose your inhibitions a little bit, it does make you think, like, is something special actually happening? Because it does feel like there's a kind of a perfect storm occurring here. Like, we've uncovered Vicario, who turns out to be some world-class keeper. Van der Ven, I don't think many people had heard of him. Eddie, I don't know if from your Football Manager days, he'd even popped up on your radar. I'm not sure, but he wasn't one of the ones that I'd heard of. And then, like, you know, Adoghi, we'd heard about him because we'd signed him the year before for Conte, but like no one really knew how good he was going to be. Porro, a lot of people wrote him off. And then, yeah, that midfield looks excellent when everyone's fit, especially with Bentancur coming back in. The forwards,
that's where we...
obviously Son is fantastic. The other two starting to worry me slightly, but I mean, I'm kind of nitpicking there. Overall, like, we are scoring goals and winning games. And then crucially, like, Ange, it could be the case that we have just found like this amazing manager who's just been consistently underrated by everyone because he came from Australia. Because we're not playing football like other people. And I think people, journalists especially, hadn't really done their research on Ange. Not a lot of people knew about him unless you'd been familiar with either Australian football, what a niche, or Japanese football, another niche. And then Scottish football, I mean, to everyone apart from Glenn, that's a niche. But like,
sorry, we know your creed is in Scottish football.
Yeah. Well, I don't think the listeners ever heard my views on it. I think that was lost to the sands of time. But
all right.
But yeah, like, he could just be like a, well, he does, from the evidence of our eyes, he's an amazing coach. So who knows? I know there could be stuff as a joke, but
yeah,
you know, we were saying at the start of the season, we'd be happy coming like eighth, seventh, as long as we saw improvement. And now we're top of the table after 9 games, potentially. I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but we could beat Palace and then we're 5 points ahead. Other teams are starting to get tough fixtures. City are playing United. Like, I don't know. I don't know. It could be something special happening.
We do have to consider that the things that we're like concerned about are like very real concerns. It's not just a case that we're like worried about injury, like even missing a player like Maddison for 2 or 3 games. Those 2 or 3 games could like derail us a little bit. It is a bit precarious that the team, the first 11, brilliant first 11, but the depth is quite spooky. I know we've said this on the chat a lot, but just a drop off is insane. And I think, listen, I'm not going to compare, or I'm not going to really. It's not a fair comparison to compare the quality of the players coming on versus the players that went off, but because we made 5 changes and it's hard to maintain any momentum. But with that said, the quality isn't there. I mean, if you saw the drop off from when we were playing Porro and Adogi to when Emerson was on the pitch and Adogi and Porro, I think for the first 10 minutes, Porro and Adogi and Emerson were swapping because they weren't sure who was more comfortable on which side. Like, we shouldn't be doing that in game. that just screams uncertainty, and a better team will exploit that. Absolutely, a better team would exploit that. Skip, again, another player that, like, in bits and spurts has looked like someone that could do something, like could be a utility player, could be a stopgap, could be someone that does a job. But actually, when you're trying to improve a team, you can't have many of these players. You can have one or two, but if every option is someone that can do a job but isn't proficient enough, technically proficient enough in their position, you're going to lose so much every single time you bring another one of those players on. And I like Lo Celso. I think Lo Celso is good in the ball, but if he's going to be surrounded by other players who aren't as good on the ball, he's going to look bad. And I thought he didn't look good when he came on either, even though he was at least trying to do something on the ball.
That's what it looked like.
Yeah, it just looked like the rest of the team weren't on the same wavelength. And I think, look, we're going to lose Sarr, we're going to lose Bissouma, we're going to lose, these are confirmed losses due to international competitions. We're going to lose Son. Like, we have to figure out how to play without these players. Bissouma and Sarr, okay, maybe we can do that. Maybe, especially with Bentancur coming back, and if there is some movement in the January transfer window, although we have to do it from the beginning for it to be at all useful. But losing Son, like,
kills us.
It's a big, big worry, because even though I don't think Richarlison played bad yesterday, it, like, we are sticking him out wide to accommodate for Son. Like, he put in a couple good crosses, don't get me wrong, and actually Maddison, if he's really busting the gut to get in there, he could have got his goal a lot earlier, actually, with that beautiful cut. Or maybe it was just the first goal from Son. But apart from that, though, like, Richarlison isn't a winger. I know he's played out there before, and he's played there for Everton, he's played there for Watford, but he is not a winger. And more to the point, he's not an Ange winger. Maybe he can do a job out there, but Ange needs his wingers to do a lot, and Richarlison can't do that. And actually, Adogi's doing way more work when Richarlison's out on the left, because he has to be an option, because Richarlison doesn't have that trickery. I think we either put a lot of, like, faith in Johnson and Hill to, like, really be creative outlets for us. And so all that Richarlison has to do is finish, which he's even struggling with that at the moment. Or we do have to, like, get in another attacker in January if we do really want to see something special happen at Tottenham this season. So, yeah, it is a big worry. And again, we do have a pretty tough run in into Christmas, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. But we keep saying this will be the test. This will be the test. This is, and we've passed all our tests so far. So it is just a case of like, okay, how do we manage to sustain this over like a run of games, which we do consider difficult games.
Yeah, I did notice a couple of things with Richarlison. I noticed early in the first half, I felt like players weren't passing to him, which is not a good sign. Not only were they not passing to him, Fulham were leaving him unmarked because I just don't think they saw him as a threat. And then that led to us not passing to him. Secondly, I noticed Son was actually in a pretty good position at one point in the second half and deliberately passed it to Richarlison when I actually think he could have had a shot himself. And like those two things spooked me a bit. But yeah, no, I agree, Eddie, even though I am one to get really quite ahead of myself with, you know, what can Spurs do this season? I always caveat it by the fact that we're, you know, only ever one injury away from the team dying on its arse, especially Son. I just don't think we can take an injury to Son. I think it just kills us, completely blunts us. Aaron, what were you going to say?
I was just thinking, yeah, similar to the Richarlison thing. Whenever he, and Eddie touched on this a little bit, whenever he gets the ball, he looks like someone who's deliberately made a bad player on FIFA. He can't take someone on. Every shot that he sort of produced in that game, like spooned miles over the bar, like he looked dreadful. And the stats are a little bit deceiving because he has actually got 4 goal contributions this year in his 9 games, which on paper, that's not bad. A goal and assist every other game for Richarlison, but I think they are a little bit deceiving. And the last thing that I was thinking just before we go into a little break, was that how do we feel about the player that I see on our bench that is maybe an underlying Son replacement? Is I'd like to maybe see at some point, if we have to, Brennan Johnson through the middle, just because he's got that pace. He's very direct in a way that Son is. Maybe it's something that we will need to explore at some point.
Maybe. Yeah, I guess we'll answer that on the other side. Let's go to a quick break. Yeah, so Aaron, as you were saying about Brennan Johnson, you raised the fact that he could be the person coming in for Son. I've got mixed feelings on it, actually, and I was almost... I quite liked that we had the break to kind of think about it because it kind of did give me a bit of a new perspective on it because really, instinctively, I only really want to see him like off the wing kind of thing because I feel like that's probably his best position. But we have spent a hell of a lot of money on him. We spent more money on him than Maddison. And I think within that, the club has got to believe in his talent. And perhaps we underrate him a bit because he came from Forest and we didn't see too much of the games. I knew he had a decent season last season, but he wasn't one of the players like on my radar, like sort of like Mitoma or Pedro Neto, who's playing for like a smaller club where you're like, oh, it'd be amazing if we signed him. He wasn't that kind of player. But the fact is, like, I'm not sure how much City got Jeremy Doku for, but I think it was around similar price range.
It wasn't too much more. It was more. It wasn't too much more.
Yeah, exactly. And I know we were sniffing around Doku. Once City came in for him, obviously we can't compete because we can't compete with the wages or the fact that they just hoover up trophies. So it's not fair to compare him to Doku, but it does suggest that we see him as a player in that ballpark because there was other options as well that I saw Spurs fans say that we could have signed people like Williams from Bilbao. So the fact that the club has spent this money on him and really wants him, maybe he can be a player that can turn into someone like Son. But right now, I don't see it. But I've been wrong on players in the past. I'm not writing him off, by the way. I'm just saying, like, if Son did get injured, I would be shitting myself, basically. Eddie, what do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, just as a little, like, I just had a quick look based on what we were talking about. And Brennan Johnson, the fee was bandied about 47.5 million. And Doku was around 55.5 million. So we're talking less than 10 million. And, like, I think Doku's a fantastic player. I don't know if, like, that fee is quite as outrageous for Brennan Johnson, especially when you consider the fact that, like, the homegrown quota gets filled there as well. On top of the fact that he is still quite young, and the fact that he is the type of profile that we need. Because with Ange, when you're paying for specialists in their position, they're not just wing backs or they're not just centre attacking midfielders. I think that we're trying to build a squad that can shift and change and be malleable. Like, we all thought that when Brennan Johnson came in, although, like, he does play off the wing, he could play across that front three. I think any of those attackers really can. Even Kulusevski, like, although it might be Harambe, like, he potentially could play across that front three. So I don't know. I think the first thing you need to do is nail down a spot before we can think about, like, where he could potentially take someone's spot or play through the middle or whatever. He needs to get a run of games in, and we'll potentially go on to like the limitations of our starting 11. Like, where do we improve? I do think we improve in our attacking three, whether that's just like improving on the players that are already playing or like newer players actually fighting for those spots. Cause I think they're the most open to change. Like, that front three is where you can actually fight to take that position off someone who's already starting there. Because, yeah, you're talking about the game feeling and looking different from home compared to when you're at the stadium. And I think Kulusevski was the biggest benefiter off that from you guys in the stadium and the biggest loser from people watching from home. Because I thought, especially in that second half, everything that went through him slowed down. It was laboured. It was all the things that we were very frustrated about last season when we weren't playing well and Kulusevski was pretty bad. The difference is that we're playing 5, 10 yards, 15 yards even higher last season. Actually, more than 15 yards higher when you consider how deep we were playing last season at times. So, like, the difference there is that Kulusevski is not carrying the ball 40 yards every time. He's carrying the ball about 15, 20 yards, 25 yards. And so, like, the reliance on him to keep on hold of the ball isn't as heavy, and it's much more in the final third. And I thought he was particularly wasteful, whereas, like, sometimes I thought he's been unlucky in the sense that, like, he's gotten into the right positions, but potentially players are not making the right runs, or we weren't in the right positions across the pitch. But yeah, I just thought he was really, really wasteful and a bit like slow, and his decision making, it just needs to improve flat out.
Yeah, I think Inkulu, yeah, I was one of the ones that kind of stood up for him a bit. Don't get me wrong, I shared in the frustration. There were times, particularly, I think, when we were getting nearer to the Fulham goal, and you're just thinking, why aren't you shooting, or why aren't you taking an action hit? Like, why are you dilly-dallying with it, basically? But the one thing I would say with him, and it's actually similar to, spoke about it with Son earlier in the season before he got moved to striker. When you watch the highlights back, purely as highlights, like in a kind of like match of the day package or just like the ones on YouTube, Son was key to a lot of chances we created. And I do think, obviously, I'm not a stats guy, I'm not someone to delve into the stats or anything, but I do think if you looked at the stats, he probably did create quite a few chances in that game that we potentially didn't take. Because with Kulu, and I find this actually when you watch goals back sometimes, you're like, you know where, yeah, when you score a goal, you basically forget what's happened before it, more or less. And like, there'll be times.
The assist.
Yeah, there'll be times where you're like, why hasn't that guy passed? Why hasn't that guy passed? Oh, it's gone. It's gone. And then you score and you kind of forget the frustration that you had before about the person not passing.
Yeah.
I do think that probably applied to Kulusevski a few times because I believe it was him that put that chance on a plate for Richarlison, which he really should have scored.
Yeah.
And I think he did that a couple more times where you are like, okay, what are you doing here? And then all of a sudden he lays it on to someone who hasn't really done much with it. That's where I would kind of stand up for him a little bit. So I'm not as worried about Kulusevski as, well, for example, Jed is, who seems to want his head on a spike. But on the Johnson conversation, I do think Johnson probably should be a part of our front three, front three. I think he's got to come in for Richarlison. When I think of like what is the best front three Spurs can pick, it is Kulusevski, Son and Johnson, I think. And we saw that with Ange throwing him in against Arsenal. So I think Ange thinks the same as well.
It's more a case of like where he wants Kulusevski to be. If we're going to keep the ball as much as we are, like, and especially like off the ball, do we need Saar and Højbjerg like in games where we control it? Obviously, like the obvious change would be to bring on Lo Celso, but Kulusevski did go into the middle of the pitch against Sheffield, and we saw that he was creating chances from there. And I think, obviously, we were chasing a game there. You kind of throw caution a bit to the wind, but we are going to keep the ball. We've kept the ball in pretty much every single game that we played this season. And yeah, I think Saar was important in some of those transitory moments where like Fulham broke. But they're going to be less and less towards the end of the game. And I think if you have the option to, I do want to see Kulusevski step into the middle a little bit, come off that side. And then potentially, you know, like one of our inverted fullbacks go out wide instead, so that we don't lose out on that width. But yeah, I agree. I think if we're going to do anything, change anything, it's got to be Johnson for Richarlison. Whether Johnson's as comfortable on the left is another thing. I think when he started the Arsenal game, obviously eventually he came off, but when he started that Arsenal game, he did start on the left, and we didn't see in a lot. I know he did try to break a couple of times, and he does have that kind of electric pace. But you do want to see. I don't know if the Palace game is the game to bring him in, because Palace are not going to play a high line. There isn't going to be a lot of space in behind. And I actually do think that someone like Richarlison, I know this is like real kind of like Brexit football almost, but like Richarlison at least is a bigger presence in the box. We don't really have anyone that proficient in the air apart from our centre backs, and we need them in to defend rather than be in the box. So I do think Richarlison will probably start just because of that. I would be surprised if Johnson started, pleasantly surprised, but I don't know if a Crystal Palace game will be the one to show off his like best attributes. But I don't know. Like that's why Ange is the manager and I'm doing a Tottenham podcast.
Yeah, it's a fair point, actually. It's an interesting point, the one that you raise about the centre mids, because we were sold this idea of Ange Postecoglou as essentially this like attacking maverick, and we were sold on the idea that he plays more or less two number 10s, but basically as eights, but they're very attacking. And I do actually think that sometimes when I look at the team and I see Bissouma and Saar in there. And I definitely don't want to get into criticising Saar, because I think he's a player with a lot of potential and a lot of people really love him. I still see him as kind of more of like a raw player, to be honest. And I think, put it this way, I think if he maintains this level for the rest of his career, I don't think it's good enough. I think he has to grow into something else.
Yeah.
Which is kind of how I felt about Skip back in the day. But yeah, no, I mean, for a 20-year-old, he's got a lot of potential. But it is quite defensive, playing Saar and Bissouma. So and I think it would be interesting to see. Yeah, exactly. I think it would be interesting to see someone like Kulusevski or maybe even Lo Celso in there. it could be something that maybe we see if we start struggling against low blocks, of which Palace could be one, to be fair.
I think everyone going into the Palace game, of the two games, the Palace and the Fulham game, the Palace game was the way more difficult game. Even though I do appreciate Marco Silva's talents, I think Marco Silva's a great manager, and I think he's been very unlucky in the sense that, like, everywhere he's gone to, like, there's clear limitations in his squad, even though he's been able to bring in players. Like, his ideas are not translating onto the pitch, because even though he has players like Pelinha, he is also having to play players like Iwobi. And, like, the difference in quality is, like, how are you ever going to, like, get the best out of a team if that's the balance? But that Palace team is really, really good. Like, if you just look at the individuals alone, you got Guehi, Anderson, Mitchell, Alise, Eze, like, top, Doucouré, like, top players. And I know that you look at the weekend's results and a lot of the time Palace have, like, lost the game or they've drawn a game. But it's those types of games where you do have to, like, prove your mettle. Like, we have struggled against a low block for many years now. There's rarely been even under the great Poch times, like, a low block was like our kryptonite. We were never able to break them down apart from moments of individual magic from, like, someone like Son or Harry. And I think Crystal Palace is going to be an interesting game. Going onto the star point quickly. I agree, Cosmo. I do think that, like, if he has to, like, improve, or, like, if he was to develop in his career, that would have to happen in order for him to maintain a starting position at Spurs or even elsewhere. Because what he's doing now is very, like, very good. Like, he's doing the basics really well. His short passing is good. He's getting stuck in, tackling well, recovering well. But then you have to, like, be more creative with your passing, or you have to carry the ball or drive the ball or shoot better, because he shoots quite a lot, but it gets blocked so often, or, like, balloons over. So, like, these things are, like, the thing is, we're comparing him, you know how people have been comparing him to, like, I don't know, like, a young Yaya Toure or something like that. Yaya Toure, or whoever, like, whoever you want to compare him to, we're comparing to him to those players at the peak of their powers, 27, 28, 29 years old. They probably weren't, like, shooting from 30 yards and scoring every other game from these positions. But you have to grow that part of your game. But he's been an integral cog to this opening team, like, this team that's been available to Ange. He's preferred him over Skip from the second game onwards. Like, Skip had his chance and he's preferred him over. So he's played his way over Skip. And it's a case of now, when Bentancur's fit and he's available for selection, does Sarr keep Bentancur out of the team? That's entirely down to Sarr. So I don't think we're not going to need to rush Bentancur in, because Sarr's not doing a bad job, actually. But does Sarr keep his spot in the team when Bentancur becomes fit? And is it a case of Bentancur coming in for Sarr, or Bissouma taking up that number eight role and Bentancur dropping to the six? Because it's one of those things for me, and it's about what Ange wants from either Bentancur or Bissouma once our midfield is fully fit.
Do you reckon, like, given that Ange has managed that, you know, teams that are not even near to the quality of Tottenham Hotspur, do you reckon he's just like a kid on Christmas Day? Like, the fact that he's just got all these players coming back, like, he hasn't got to work with Bentancur yet, and then by all accounts, he's come back pretty strongly in training. He's sort of looks like, he doesn't look like someone who hasn't played football for 9 months. How excited do you think Postecoglou will be to, I nearly said Poch there, I did that the other day as well. It's like saying X's name, I think, a little bit. Like,
Yeah, you don't want to be saying that in front of any other Spurs fans.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, Aaron, how excited do you think he will be to work with Bentancur? And what do you think Bentancur can do coming back in?
Well, I think that on face value, he's going to be incredibly excited. If we look back to the football that Bentancur was playing before he got his injury, every Tottenham fan around would have probably said he, after Kane, he would have been the first name on the team or the second name on the team sheet. He was playing some outstanding football, and at times he was keeping us in games or winning us points. You could look back at Bournemouth, where I think he scored that vital goal there. He was absolutely incredible for us. And I think something that's really, really crucial for Bentancur is that he is quite versatile in his skill set. I think that he could play anywhere, any of the roles in our midfield. I think he could be the Maddison. I think he could be the Sarr. I think he could be the Bissouma. I think he could be any of them. There was a point at the end of, during last season, where we seemed to be struck with injuries left, right and centre. And I think even like mid-game, we had to go to Bentancur playing off the left, literally up with Kane on the left wing. And I just thought, this man really can do everything. And obviously, he's come back into training. Everything you read suggests that he's hit the ground running. And I think Ange has come out and said that he's not going to rush him. He's just going to wait until the right time. And as we sort of said earlier on, there's no need to rush him at all. And I think everyone would rather that we just take our time and get him back in when he's ready. But yeah, you're right that Ange is going to be absolutely loving playing with what is quite clearly a higher standard of footballer that he's compared to what he's trained in the past. I don't think that's unfair to say. But he's sort of said it himself that we're not at where he wants us to be yet. We are by nowhere near his standards in terms of being towards the finished article. And I think we sort of saw that in the second half against Fulham, to circle back to our most recent fixture. He was unhappy with the second half. And I felt that as well. I came away from the game feeling a little bit like I hadn't been satisfied with what I had seen. Obviously, you're going to take the 3 points all day, and we did play some lovely stuff at times, but it didn't quite hit the spot compared to some other results. And I think that's testament to Ange and the standards that he set for us. And Maddison alluded to it in his sort of post-match press conference with Monday Night Football, that the manager is very demanding and that there are times where the players still aren't meeting what he's asking for them. He spoke about how, I don't know if anyone's listened to it, but in the pre-season game against Shakhtar, Ange went absolutely mental at the players. They're not doing the jobs that they were being asked to do. And I think that when we're talking about that dip in quality as well, you're not just talking about players whose technical ability isn't quite there. You're talking about those players that aren't quite up to following Ange's instructions as well as the first team as well. But to circle back to the question, I think he's going to be very excited to have an outstanding midfielder added to his first team squad.
Yeah. Eddie, were you going to say something there?
Yeah, I was just going to say that we're talking about like a team currently which has no major injuries, but we have so many key players in terms of depth, like slowly coming back into the team. And I think what Glenn said was really funny. I don't know if it was Glenn, maybe. Is that for the first time, we don't have that Jose conundrum where it's just like, I look on the pitch, I look at the bench and I look back on the pitch. we're starting to see our bench fill out. You've got your Velez, Lo Celso, Hill, Johnson, and then when Bentancur is fit, then you're starting to look at a bench that's actually full of options that we can bring on. And the best thing is we don't have a manager scared to take off players. In every game we've taken off Son, Maddison, we've taken off like players that we would never take off under Conte, and we'd run them into the ground and then be confused as to why they're playing like 5 or 6 out of 10 every game. And I think it's important to understand, as I think most Spurs fans are understanding, it's actually everyone else doesn't seem to understand it. We know that this is the beginning of a process. This isn't the final product. And people want to put us in conversations to do with title challenges and cups and, oh, but, you know, Tottenham Hotspur are not the best team in the country. Well, statistically we are, but that's not the point. If you look at where we were at the end of last season and where we are now, and the amount of change that's happened in roughly 4 months, we'll say 4 months, it's astounding. It's genuinely astounding. And I think what's begrudging to a lot of people compared to even like 3 or 4 weeks ago is that people are like, oh, okay, like this isn't just like a flash in the pan. This is that we are actually able to see that there has been structural change to that team. There's been a mentality change in that team. And I think what people are worried about is that they're worried that we're going to be able to sustain this in following seasons. They're worried that actually over the next few seasons, and we are able to bring in players, we could potentially even get better. And we're going to need to, because I do think sooner or later, like Chelsea are going to find a gear for themselves. I do think sooner or later, like it's just going to work for Liverpool again. City are always right around the corner. Arsenal are building a sustainable project. So it is, we have to improve, otherwise we will get left behind. But I think we are doing that. And once again, Daniel Levy's locked out on his like fourth or fifth choice. Not even that, because Poch was like a fourth or fifth choice. This is more like a sixth or seventh choice, and he's locked out with Ange.
Yeah, no, it's really true. One of the things that you said on Madison and Son, which I actually thought was quite interesting, was the fact that, like, you say that Andrew's managed the minutes well. And, like, the last few games, they look like, even though they were playing well, they look like they were playing with injuries. Like, for example, like, I think the next few games after Madison did whatever the hell he did to his knee against Arsenal, which looked like an ACL, but somehow played through it.
Yeah,
he's looked like he's been carrying an injury, and same with Son, like he looked half dead on career duty. But both of them looked so sharp, especially Madison, covered so much ground. That took me by surprise a little bit. Like I think those two looked really, really fresh. Both of them, I don't even think one looks fresher than the other. I thought it was obviously really good to see. There was that. And another thing I wanted to bring up, which was like being at the ground, and I was interested to see your guys' thoughts on it or hear your guys' thoughts on it, was that there were chants of "we are top of the league" going around, and I think we were singing it right at the end, like after the whistle had blown, and then like, as you know, no, this is what makes it even worse.
During the game as well.
It was some, I was singing it during the game. This is what makes it worse, is the fact that it was the people leaving early so they could catch their train or go and beat the traffic. They were like, only 9 games in, lads. Don't get ahead of yourselves. And like almost like trying to cause like Spurs on Spurs violence for people just enjoying themselves. Like, I'm sorry, I was joining in with it. Like when I first heard it, I was like, oh, okay, it is a bit early. And then I was just like, fuck it. Just having a good time. Why not enjoy it? Like, I was singing it almost as like a bit of a joke, really. Yeah. But then you just get these people who are just miserable. And I don't know if I'd imagined this later, but I think there was like mutterings of being like, oh, this is why we don't bloody win anything. As if singing "We Are Top of the League" is going to stop you from winning a cup. It's just like, I think some people just love being miserable. It's just really annoying.
I do think there's like an inbuilt pessimism in like most Spurs fans. Like, although we talk about optimistic Aaron or even you're talking about yourself being optimistic, Cosmo, there is that like, there is that that element of like knowing that you're in a Shakespearean tragedy, but at all times, like the pride, it's always, you always feel like it's the pride before the fall, like all the time. And like most of the cases, it is. And like, to be honest, I think you want to be in a Midsummer's Night Dream every now and then. It doesn't have to be a Hamlet. It doesn't have to be a Macbeth. Like sometimes it can just be fun. It can be a comedy. And I think that if you don't allow yourself to to have fun when your team is playing well, then what's the point? Like,
yeah,
you'll get to a point where, like, you're a City fan or you're a Real Madrid fan, and the margins are so small that, like, you turn around, you lose a game, and you turn around and be like, yeah, but so we're probably going to win the next 10. Like, that isn't football to me. Although, like, it can happen to a team organically, it rarely does. But, like, that isn't football to me. The football is the chance that any game you play, there's a chance for joy and there's a chance for despair. And it's in that balance where you enjoy football the most. And so, like, yeah, people like playing down the like where we are in the league now. That's probably just a bit of self-preservation. We've been there before. We've been close, and we've not potentially reached where we wanted to be. But so what? Like, the difference between that and, like, winning and losing is so small these days that why not afford yourself the chance to dream? Like, Arsenal were not close to winning the league before last season. And then they ran the league so close.
Could have won it.
It can happen.
And I would say with that, obviously we don't get an insight into what Arsenal fans are like behind closed doors, but definitely from growing up.
Aaron does now.
I don't think they really, yeah. I don't think they enjoyed it. I don't think, I think they were always being like, oh, you know, it's going to go wrong. And then it did go wrong. Mm-hmm. So, like, you've almost wasted a whole season of a lot of hope. That does bring me onto something else as well. Like, you know, the singing of, in a lighthearted way, about we are top of the league and stuff. We would not have done that under Conte, even if we were top of the league by 10 points in, like, February or March, because there was no joy there. There was no fun there. The football was so serious and the football club was so serious that, like,
oh,
yeah, it was just dull. And then, like, winning games wasn't even fun. It was always this
relief,
constant state of paranoia that he created. That's how he manages a football club. Whereas with Ange, I think we're just on the journey with him and we're seeing where it goes. I think
Ange is so constant in his emotional, like, breadth. Like, he rarely goes mental on the touchline. He compared to other managers, he barely does any, like, in-game management. Like, he's not screaming at his players, like, 24/7. He's not, like, making tactical checks. All the work is done in the week before, and it's about managing the game to ensure that we're doing the things that he wants us to do in the game. And I think that, like, even when we score goals, the celebrations are mild at best, and almost indifferent at times. And I think that also adds to it, because we give the emotion now. It's not like a call and response with Conte where he's exploding on the touchline. We're doing the response. He goes back. We start feeling a bit insecure. We start feeling a bit frustrated. We're giving Ange the platform by supporting him throughout the game. And then Ange gives us the football that we're seeing on the pitch. And I think that's what the difference is this season, because we're seeing the improvements, like, evidently in front of our eyes.
Sorry, just eating a rice cracker. But I would say with Ange, he is very stoic on the sideline, but secretly he does love it. He loves the fans adoring him. And I thought it was a very sweet moment when he came over to clap the Ange stands. Jesus, really getting ahead of myself there. The South stand. This is me coming back from, like, 20 years in the future and being like, yeah, like, it all worked out. The stadium's named after him. Came over to the South stand. You can tell he does give off this kind of, like, almost like old school alpha male, almost Tony Soprano sort of energy, but deep down he's he is a softie and he did love it. And it was actually unexpectedly quite touching and emotional when he came over to get his clap, because it was just like, I think as a Spurs fan as well, like what we've gone through with Conte, it just feels nice to have someone you like managing us. And yeah, clearly it means a lot to him as well. So I did feel a little bit of a, I wouldn't say lump in my throat, but it was like the beginnings of being a bit moved, I would say.
Yeah,
100%.
I think so. And I think you, like, at the end of the day, we've spoken about like the meaning of football, especially when we spoke a lot about it during like lockdown. We spoke about it during like Black Lives Matter and stuff like that. Like football is a community. There was that incredible advert I think Norwich did for like mental health, and like football for a lot of people, like week in week out, that's the constant. Things can happen in life, you know, all manners of things can happen in life, but football, you know, Barclays, or not Barclays, but Premier League football is on every week, apart from the blasted international breaks. but like, it's there. And I think the problem last season and a couple of seasons before that is that for us, it was like, it's such a chore. Like, it was there, but like, it wasn't a relief. Like, every week, it was like, how are Tottenham going to like jeopardize my weekend? Like, I would hate when Tottenham played at like Saturday early kickoff, because it's like, oh cool, they're just gonna ruin my weekend then, great. But then also, like, I'd hate when Tottenham played like last on the Sunday. It's like, I've had a good weekend, but they're just gonna ruin my week now.
Yeah.
But actually now I'm actually looking forward to us playing. And it was so frustrating to have to wait till Monday to watch us play.
Yeah.
And can you imagine saying that, like, even last season?
Yeah, and it's the same on this Friday as well. I'd kind of forgotten we were playing on the Friday, and I have sort of got plans booked in with my girl. But it has become such a, like, calendar event. So, I mean, we'd always try our best to watch Spurs, but...
Yeah.
Well, I went through a stage of, I hadn't missed a Spurs game since, I think it was only Conte that broke me. I think from like 2015, when we played away against West Brom, I think Harry Kane scored two. I think we won 3-1. I went from there until what Conte did to me without like missing the game. That's how engaged I was. It was just, yeah, we can't have this conversation again. I feel like I have this conversation every single time. Conte just left such a fucking mark on my ability to support Spurs. Like, I never...
Yeah.
Do you remember we were on the podcast saying, like, right, what are we actually going to do instead of football? We need to...
It was around about the time that I got, like, unlimited card. I'm like, I'm going to just become a film bro. I don't really have time to relax. When I was watching Tottenham.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's nice to get... It's nice to have our club back. You know what I mean? It's one of those vibes. And yeah, I'm actually really excited to see what we can do. Like, even if we don't win against Crystal Palace and we just get a point, that still means that we're 3 points clear. And I just think it's a continuation of a positive trajectory. At the end of the season, if we finish fourth and we're in the Champions League, that is overachieving considering what we've had to get through from last season to come to this season with the squad that we have. So yeah, just super excited to see what we can do.
Do you remember the stress of chasing Leicester for the league towards the end when it was really slipping away and it was horrible and you're running out of games and you're like, oh, we have to win this. What's that, Eddie?
And we were winning them until we didn't.
Yeah, exactly. It was just so stressful and you needed them to lose as well.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, Aaron, probably end on this, like, Do you have any, perhaps even 1% of that feeling yet? Or
I think it's difficult for me to see past the good times at the moment. We'll learn a lot when the bad results, if and when they come, and we'll see really what we are made of as a new branded Tottenham Hotspur. But I think it's really difficult for me to see past glory right now, because it's all we know under Ange at the moment.
What if they never come?
I think that they have to come. I've got faith. I've got my
champion tattoo booked on.
Yeah. You've got, bad faith. You've got bad faith.
Don't worry about that.
It's all fun. Eddie, what if they never come? What if we don't lose this season?
You'll see me running down that Tottenham High Street in my Ange boxes, bruv.
Let's get that as a promise. Let's get that as a promise.
It on the podcast. It's recorded.
There we go.
Yeah.